You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of Wicked Horror Show is broadcast live to Facebook. In this episode, we're talking about the movie Cold Moon. We're joined by actor and director Griff First, as well as actress Rachel Brooks Smith. And as always, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show just like this one. We have an open chat room where you can talk to the guests, talk to us, just come hang out. And lastly, we're proud to announce that the Earplug Podcast Network, along with Wicked Horror Show, will be at the Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival. This festival is going to be amazing. There's 110 films that spread out over 11 days. From November 2nd till November 9th, we'll be at the Dipson Theater Eastern Hills Cinema in Williamsville, New York, and November 10th through November 12th at the Screening Room Cinema Cafe in Amherst, New York. For more information, head over to BuffaloDreamsFantasticFilmFestival.com or just do a search on Facebook for Buffalo Dreams Film Festival. So come hang out with us opening weekend. It's going to be a good time. Watch some movies, have some drinks, good stuff. But first, enjoy the show. Yes.
Just letting you know. No, the reason I'm letting him know is because we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago that Leo was doing. He's like, what the hell are you talking about? So that's why I'm telling you. Continue, Leo.
That's why I made him do it. Pepsodent.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the Ron Popeil of podcasting, I just have to say. Like pocket fisherman. So that's me. Hey, Wolfie, you're here.
Ow, everybody. My throat's messed up, so no howl tonight.
Yay. Oh, I'm sorry. Hope you're okay.
Yo-Yo.
Sorry.
Hey, everybody. Yeah. I'm here.
Now, Tony.
What is going on, people?
And our very special guest from the movie Cold Moon. You've seen this guy everywhere. Griff First.
Hello, everybody.
And Rachel Smith. Is it Rachel Brooks Smith, right?
What's up, guys?
You've also seen her everywhere.
Yeah.
They've both been all over the place. Their IMDb is very impressive.
Crazy.
You guys are very busy. Busy working actors, and it's impressive, to say the least.
Well, plus Cold Moon. Matter of fact, Griff, do we have permission to play the trailer?
Yeah, let's play the trailer.
Okay, so give me 1 second to load it up here. And There we go. Cold Moon trailer. This movie, we absolutely loved it. We know you're going to love it too. And as soon as the video loads, I can play it. Where is it? Here it is.
Hey, Mr. Geiger.
Hi, sweetheart.
Margaret left on her wheel right after lunch.
I just thought she'd be back by now.
She can't have gotten very far on a bike. We will find her.
Now, you know that you've been behind on your payments for 8 months, right?
Today's not a real good day to talk about that.
Evelyn Larkin is going to lose the farm right soon, and I want to make sure that land comes to the bank.
Where is Margaret?
We can't find Margaret.
Jenny! Come here!
Shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall all be changed.
You're so tired, Daddy.
You don't look tired.
You know what kind of tired I'm talking about.
Hey, everybody. Well, like Leo said, we have Griff First and Rachel Brooks Smith from Cold Moon. But Griff, I just want to get in before we get into your movie, Cold Moon. I want to talk to you a little bit about something that's definitely close to my heart, Kevin knows what I'm going for.
Yeah, I was just like, Wolfie, you're going to take the lead on this one because he's obsessed with shark movies.
I love shark movies. Every now and then, sci-fi will show like this, you know, 3 days worth of shark movies. I'm recording them all so I can just sit down and have like a shark marathon. And you've directed two of my favorites. Trailer Park Shark.
Oh, good.
Swamp Shark.
The newest one and the oldest one. So that's good.
Yeah, and Rachel, you were in one of my favorites, Atomic Shark.
I was going to say, what about Atomic Shark? Come on.
Which I also directed, by the way.
Atomic. Really? Shark.
Yeah. My name's not on the movie, but I directed it. I used a pseudonym for that one, just for fun.
And you also did like Lake Placid 3, and I mean, was there something there? I mean, did you just say, hey, I just want to do like creature feature big alligator shark stuff or what?
Not at all. No. I mean,
that's my passion. This is real passion right
there. Yeah. Like, I graduated from high school and I said, this is the path I'm on, shark movies. I've always loved creature features and shark movies. Jaws was my favorite movie ever since I was like 4 years old. Love that movie. So I always wanted to make shark movies. And somebody just offered me the opportunity to do it. And I guess I'm good at it because the opportunities keep coming. We're actually about to start another one, which is not a sequel, but it's in the related universe, is what the network is calling it, to Trailer Park Shark and Atomic Shark. And actually, Rachel is going to be in it from Atomic Shark, and some of the cast from Trailer Park Shark will be in a whole new story. You guys will love it, though, because it's straight. The last couple have been very campy on purpose, and they let us really take them very far down the camp road, but they want us to go straight horror with the next one. So that's what we're going to do. So we're actually going to make a horror shark movie for the first time in a long time.
Yeah. So Trailer Park Shark actually saw the reunion of Tara Reid and the other guy, the guy that played her boyfriend in
Nicholas.
Yeah. From American Pie. I mean,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It was kind of funny. It's like all of a sudden she pops up and I'm like, oh, look, it's Tara Reid. And I got things going on in my head.
You know? I don't know if I want to know about that.
Well, you know. It's from your experience. That's all.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know.
Yeah. So anyways, we don't want to get into that. We don't want to, you know, but, so Cold Moon, we were able to check it out.
Yes.
We got the link from Uncorked. And again, like we've said it on the last bunch of shows, they've really been they've been putting out some quality stuff. They've really been kind of killing it. Like they send us the links to stuff, and it's like, all right, well, it may not even sound like something that we dig, but they attached our name to quality stuff. And again, this is another one that we weren't disappointed with. At first, I thought the movie was going to go a certain way.
Really sure what to think of it at first.
And then I'm just like, oh, okay, no, this has completely changed. So yeah.
Oh, good. At which point was that?
I thought it was going to be about the grandmother, the grandmother and the kid the whole time. I mean, I thought it was going to be them the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh no, that's not the case whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know, I don't want to give too much away, obviously.
Don't give it away.
Yeah, but I thought it was going to be like from their perspective the whole time, but
yes, no, it's not
for a loop. Yeah.
Good. That's what I liked about the screenplay, is it was different. It took a different kind of it wasn't your typical structure, and it's kind of a mystery, but not for long. And I like that the focus of the story took a pretty dramatic shift. That's what attracted me to it, because it's different. I haven't seen that in a while, not since 1959 or so.
Mm-hmm. I remember even when I read the script, that was one of my favorite things. I remember I read it flying. I was working on Knife Guys, and I had like a double night shooting, and then I was supposed to read the script, and then go home and do a Skype audition with Griff and the other person right there. And I was very sure that I was going to get on the plane and, you know, start reading the script and like pass out. And I couldn't even fall asleep. And then most of the time, you know, scripts aren't, let's just say a lot of scripts have put me to sleep. This one like kept me on the edge of my seat the whole time. And so I was like, so, you know, just dying for this role and doing this film is so but such good writing.
Yeah.
So being involved with the movie, Rachel, what was your favorite part about doing this movie? I mean,
well, working with Griff, obviously. I mean, that was my absolute favorite part.
That and the Six in the Woods. Those were her favorites.
but I mean, honestly, I've been dying to play a Southern character for a really long time. And so that was something that was, I feel like, really, you know, what I loved. And just Belinda herself, like, she's just so, I remember feeling so unbelievably happy throughout the whole movie, because obviously, like, you know, the characters you play do have an effect on you. And I just, I know, I still remember the whole experience. Like, even though there was a lot of stuff we had to go through during the film, like, just it was one of the happiest times I think I've been, you know, because I don't know, it's such a dream come true.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah, yeah, and besides yourself, I mean, the cast was great. Like,
there's some
icons in there, definitely. I was just like, I was kind of like, I didn't look at the IMDb for the movie, like, on purpose. I didn't want to read the synopsis. I just wanted to see the movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And the first thing I thought, you know, obviously, you have Christopher Lloyd in there. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, Christopher Lloyd's in this movie? This is ridiculous. And then I was telling Tony before, like, you guys came on, I was watching, I'm like, there was a guy, like, there was a big crowd scene, and there's a guy on stage with, like, a, looked like a big snake, and I was like, that looks like Tommy Wiseau. And then I looked it up, I'm like, it is Tommy Wiseau. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then I was expecting him to have, like, I was expecting more from Tommy, and I was like,
more from Tommy. That's more than Tommy was supposed to do, so.
Oh, really?
He popped by because he was friends with one of our producers. I'd never met him before, and the other producer said Tommy really wants to be a part of this show and he wants to do something. And I said, Tommy, it's not a Tommy Wiseau kind of movie. But he wanted to come by and he wanted to play the background kind of host guy. And he comes up to me, we're talking through the scene. He says, hi, Mr. Director. I really think we should have a knife fight here. I really feel like getting in a knife fight. And I just looked at him like, cool, man. We'll try to fit that in, I guess. He wanted to do like a whole monologue as the rattlesnake rodeo guy. Just such a character, man.
That's funny. Did he throw around a football on set? Have you ever seen The Room?
Oh my God, yeah, I've seen The Room. I can't, okay. Like, I'm looking so forward to seeing The Disaster Artist. I'm surprised.
Oh my God, doesn't it look great?
Oh, it looks fantastic. So good. Especially if you love The Room. I mean, I love The Room.
Yeah, it's everyone should see it. It's an experience. For sure.
So,
but yeah, it was awesome to see him in it though. I like legit, even from, I was watching it on the computer screen, and from far away, I'm like, that looks like Tommy Wiseau. And I looked it up, I'm like, son of a bitch, it's Tommy Wiseau.
And he's the top build on there too.
I know.
I was like, oh, he's going to IMDb, be there forever. And it was like,
stars
four
Tommy
seconds.
Wiseau.
That's the thing IMDb does. And I mean, they just, based on the star meter, because of The Disaster Artist, he got bumped to the top, and they don't let you put the order in, you know?
That's funny.
Because I'm looking, I'm like, who are all these great actors and everything? I look and it's like Tommy Wiseau. I'm like, I saw him for like 3 seconds. So I'm like, okay.
But either way, it's still cool to have him in the movie. Like, he was recognizable from as far back as he was.
Yeah.
But what was it like working with some of these, with like Christopher Lloyd? What was it like working with Christopher?
Man, I remember the first day that I worked with him feeling super intimidated, just because I grew up watching Going Back to the Future, and I had, even before we started, I would just like went on a binge watch, rewatching all of his stuff, like Needles in the Outfield, and especially because my character was so light and full of life, and his was very, you know, very grumpy old man. And he somewhat is a little bit of a, I don't say a full-on method actor, but really just taken in that. And we're having to really commit, not letting his energy affect me. Just really the whole time, you know, he really stayed in his wheelchair a lot of times. I didn't even get to see him out, you know, walking up that much. And I don't know, but every scene, it was just so phenomenal to work with him. And then at the end of the movie, I remember, like, his last day, like, on a night shoot, and he... Gosh, I'll just never forget it, because I never really seen him moving around that much, and he like ran up to me and picked me up, like swung me around, and he was like, "I love working with you," and it was just definitely a moment I'll always remember as an actress, and definitely as a viewer.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, it's, I don't know. I mean, he's a legend, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've told the story before. Back to the Future, I saw it the day that it came out. I sat through it like all six showings that day with my buddy Fang. You know, we never left the theater. We went there.
Did you pay for those six showings?
We went there. We paid for the first ticket. We sat down in the theater, and then when it was over, when the first showing was over, we said, "Hey, I could sit through that again." And since it was in our hometown, and we knew a lot of the people that worked at the theater, they never kicked us out. They just cleaned around us. And so for like the entire six showings, we just paid for like one shot. But yeah, it's one of my favorite movies.
You're just like peeing in jars.
Yeah,
like exactly. Waiting for the next screening to start.
I must say too, with Christopher Lloyd, he's been in a lot of like what was it, Piranha 3D and stuff.
Yeah.
So he took that like, you know, well, I was about to say, you know, serious roles, but then he's in, you know.
Well, he's. I mean, no, he's been in a lot of different stuff. Like
he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah,
yeah. In Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, Taxi.
Taxi. Yeah.
He's just he's an incredible actor, and I too am a huge fan of Back to the Future. It's probably one of, if not my favorite movie, favorite trilogy. Well, it's hard to compare that to Raiders. I mean, Indiana Jones. But anyhow, love that movie. Love Doc Brown. Love that character. And I had actually met him when I was really young because he did a movie with my father called The Dream Team, and I remembered him. And when I read the book Cold Moon Over Babylon, which is based on, I thought of him immediately because it was a really quirky character.
I remember The Dream Team.
Yeah, so I was on that set, but I was only like six, and I met him then. I've always wanted to work with him as an adult, and I'm happy that he accepted the role because it's immediately who I thought of. And the dude is... He does something completely different every take. I mean, the same character, his character is consistent, but he just gives you such different choices. It was hard to edit him because they're all pretty genius. It's just like, what level of Chris do you want? Because he'll do some low-key stuff and some way over-the-top stuff. And I'm always inclined to choose the way over-the-top stuff because it reminds me of Doc Brown.
Yeah. You know?
So I'm like, oh, I love that so much.
So you just mentioned your father. I mean, is it okay if we talk about him a little bit?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
You know, I mean, obviously he was an inspiration for you to go into movies. Was there anything that, like, anything in particular he did that made you really fall in love with movies?
He was always very generous, which I didn't realize when I was a kid, with bringing me to work with him. Because I look at it now, when I'm on work, I'm very focused. And my son is only 3 and a half, but I wouldn't necessarily want him to be at work with me because I'm trying to think, you know, and he would take me to work. I mean, I probably spent more time on set with him than I did at school. So just that in and of itself, laid the groundwork, not only for passion, but just for an understanding of production in general, you know, so because I would go with him everywhere, St. Elsewhere and The Dream Team and Babylon 5 and all that stuff. So I think, you know, just being around that from earlier than I can remember is pretty much the only choice of what to do when I, you know, was old enough to make a decision of what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I know your father, I loved him. You know, I mean, just a great, great guy all around. But Rachel, what about you? I mean, what were some of the inspirations that got you into acting?
Oh man, I grew up a really competitive gymnast actually, and but I was really stressed out all the time because it was so competitive at such a young age. And then when I finally got the courage to quit, it was really difficult because it was my life and also my mom's life, and I had just broken my hand and had surgery and my hands, and basically it was just in a really difficult time. And I saw this movie called Center Stage. It was the first dance film I had ever seen. And it was that moment when you just fall in love with films and the power of films to change your state. And I went from feeling so just depressed and confused about life and like lost my identity and my best friend and my mom at the time. And to feeling so driven and so passionate that like, I just want to do that with my life. I want to tell stories. I want to inspire people and be able to take them through an experience where they can go from, you know, literally not knowing what they're doing with their life to exactly what they want to do or feeling like they could go take over the world. And interestingly enough, actually, I made it really hard right after I saw that movie. I sat in the theater after for a long time by myself, and like, I didn't want to leave my seat. And I just sat there and started visualizing, you know, doing that, and walked out of the theater and told my family, actually they kind of pulled me out of the theater. They didn't want to leave, but that I was like, give me an acting classes, give me a dance classes. And I was about 14 at the time. And I just I don't know, I lived and breathed it, like acting classes, dance classes, and just studying film, storytelling, and, you know, just putting on little comedy sketches or characters all the time. And kind of long story short, through a lot of ups and downs, challenges and stuff, I actually ended up playing the lead in the sequel to that same film. That was my first film, a first lead in a film I had ever done. It was really that, doing that, playing that, so, you know, surreal and awesome and amazing.
That really has to be, I mean, surreal. It's like, hey, here's the movie that inspired me, and now I'm in the sequel.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
I would watch the first one all the time when things got really hard, you know, especially I moved to Los Angeles when I was 18. Even though my whole family is like in medicine, so it was really difficult because they were like, why aren't you going to college and go the normal route? And I moved to LA on a performing arts scholarship program. And even though, like, I still did college online, it was just a very different path than, you know, my dad's a brain surgeon. So it was really challenging to be able to convince them to let me go after it. And I really had to, you know, work my ass off. And I mean, now, you know, they're like my biggest supporters, but, and we actually have gotten to do a lot of really cool, even at my dad's hospital with different movies that I've had to, we've done, like, you know, private screenings to raise funds for brain cancer research, and it's been just like such a really cool thing. And I'm really grateful.
That's really cool. Awesome.
Yeah. It's funny you were talking about like being like so competitive with the gymnastics, and acting I know is very competitive as well. Yeah. So I guess that's like ingrained in you. Like, yeah, you want to compete, but at the same time too, it's just a different art form.
Totally. But I'm so thankful every day, as hard as gymnastics was, that I really know that upbringing, just being in like kind of that mindset, is what helps me so much every day as an actress. Not even that you're just competitive, but I feel like the only person you can really ever compete with is yourself. You know, that like I really do every day just try to be like in competition with like my, you know, to be my very best at everything for you. And yeah, and not let, even on set, you know, we know Griff, even on Cold Moon, we had to, the pool was supposed to be heated and it wasn't. It didn't get heated in time. And he's like, so how do you feel about jumping in a freezing cold pool? And I was like, I guess I'm going to do it.
Well, it was heated. It was just insufficiently heated.
This is the second movie
Yeah.
We just talked to someone like a week ago or the week or two weeks ago. Demons. For the movie, this movie Demons, where they had the same situation where the pool was heated, but it wasn't heated enough.
Well, yeah, it was heated. They'd rented out a palatial, nice big house, and the people that own the house weren't there over the winter, so they turned the heater off. Hmm. You know, and it takes a while for the heater to warm up this pool. And it just wasn't warm enough. The water.
It's weird that there's
enough.
another pool story.
Well, it's so funny because like, the first time, remember, Griff, the first time I jumped in, it wasn't. It was like the second day when we did the whole night shoot. We did have it. We were able to get it more heated, a lot more heated. But I remember the first day, I had to jump in really fast. I didn't have to stay in there, but I just remember it was supposed to be like a warm summer day. And I remember in the scene, I had to try so hard to not make my lips shake and not feel like I was freezing, because I was supposed to be like, you know, this super warm hot day. So yeah, it's
because our pool didn't have a heater, period. We had to bring in an external heater, but it was really noisy, so we had to turn it off every time we were going to shoot. It was 32 degrees, so it cooled down.
Oh,
really.
Jesus.
I was going to say, hopefully it was, you said it was supposed to be a nice hot day. It was middle of December with some, you know.
That seems to be the...
That's acting.
Yeah.
That's
good job.
You know what I mean?
Good job.
That seems to be the rule of thumb when making horror films. You know, it's like they, like Friday the 13th was shot like in the middle of like November, December, the first one.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to do all that swimming out at the lake, you know, and it's freezing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they do it that way because they don't have to deal with all the people that are at the camp during the summertime making all the noise, you know?
Yeah, it pretty much comes with the territory for any movie. You know, it's like today I had to do something where I was wearing a thermal, a sweatshirt, and a coat, but it was, you know, 90 degrees in LA today. So it's either one or the other, either freezing your ass off or sweating your ass. Never.
That's horrible.
Yeah. But there's a certain amount of you know what I mean? I just think like mental toughness that you have to have as an actor, just in general, that I feel like, especially, I mean, that's why I'm so into movement or athletics or just, you know, just trying to, I just feel like that's my way of like every day being able to exercise that kind of toughness.
And that's why I can't be an actor. I don't have that. That's the hardest part. Imagine if I was wearing a thermal and a coat and I, like in the middle of the scene, I'm like, you guys hot? I'm hot.
Like, you almost, dude, you almost made it into the new Ghostbusters.
No, I didn't.
What?
Oh, they asked you to.
No, I didn't. I tried out to be an extra and they didn't call me back.
Exactly. That's
not almost making it into the Ghostbusters.
That's almost, I said almost being in it.
It's closer than most of the other 250 million
Americans. Yeah, actually, you know who was even closer? It was James from the Massachusetts Ghostbusters. He was actually there and they filmed. He just got cut out of the scene.
They're
like, we can't have any other Ghostbusters in this movie. So right,
exactly.
Cut him out.
Some of the other guys from his group were in it, though. So, yeah, he got the shaft. But anyways.
Brutal shooting conditions, that's why you end up with a movie like that. You guys remember that Russell Crowe movie, A Good Year, that Ridley Scott directed?
Good Year.
I don't think I ever saw it.
Yeah, because it made no money, nobody saw it. But it's like, I think they just wanted to go up the wine country with nice weather and wear, like, linen shirts for once. And they made a movie and nobody saw it. But it's like, at least they were comfortable.
Yeah.
For once, you know.
I guess it brings out the other, you know, the more passion. If you're dealing with that stuff, maybe you're not going to focus on messing up, you know? It's like, all right, I'm going to pass out because I'm so warm. So let me get these lines out right. So that way I don't have to do this again. So that's what
I guess it could be some motivation in some weird way.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to justify it in my head. That's why I can't do it. And there's also a lack of talent. That's the other thing, too. I don't have any. Yeah.
So but especially in that scene, I'm sure the coldness didn't last too long. No spoilers or anything, but especially at that point.
Yeah, I mean, luckily that was a pretty short. It was a pretty short scene. But then, you know, the next day when we had to spend a long amount of time in the water, it was warm.
There was a good portion of the movie where you're wet out of the water on the ground, and yeah. I think that's when you're the coldest for sure.
Yeah, I was pretty, but it also helps, you know, just at that point, you know, I was supposed to be in a lot of pain and, you know, so that also.
That works, that helps, yeah. Because you were in a lot of pain. You were getting frostbitten.
I was dying of being frozen.
Where was the movie filmed?
It was shot in, right outside of New Orleans, Covington, Slidell, Louisiana. We ended up shooting some in Pensacola, Florida. And the movie is actually based between New Orleans and Pensacola, so all in the area that's indigenous to the novel.
Okay.
How long did it take to make the movie from the minute you got the script and you're on board to you know, final cut and you're ready to put it out?
It took, once I read the book, I love the story. I knew I wanted to make it. So we jumped into the production really quick. So from reading the book to writing the script to actually shooting the movie was pretty quick. But then we spent a really long time in post with the movie. The movie ended up being like 2 hours and 15 minutes
when we got
done with the original cut. And so we worked on, there was like five different iterations where we kept making it shorter and kept making it shorter. Now it's 90 minutes or something like that. And then also the visual effects, we kept tweaking as well. We just wanted to get them really right. So it took about a full year of post-production, whereas Trailer Park Shark, for example, that's like, you know.
Day and a half.
Yeah.
We got a guy over here with a computer that can just animate a shark. Yeah.
It's a difference. We spent a whole year on Cold Moon, and yeah, Trailer Park Shark's like maybe 8 weeks total.
Wow.
Yeah.
I must say the thing I like about Cold Moon, too, is the combination of different genres. I think that's what kept me through it. Like, we got the horror comedies now. This one's like a murder mystery, horror, like ghost story all combined into one. So it kind of hits on every single genre that, you know, you have a niche that people like.
Don't forget, like, the psychological aspect when, you know, they're... You know, not to spoil anything, but when the ghosts are wreaking havoc, trying to make somebody crazy, and You know, like that one scene when he's driving backwards with the Jeep, and then all of a sudden you see the face, you know, he drives right by. It was just some of the visuals were just amazing in this movie. And then the whole, like, bike scene in midair, that was pretty freaky.
Don't give too much away, Pawn.
Just give the whole synopsis, the whole movie, scene by scene. Just read the script. Trailer, so.
I'm such a fan of film in general, and I love dramas, but it's hard to find somebody who's going to let me make a drama, just because they're, you know, they're very hard to sell, especially on a smaller budget. So that's what I liked about it. I had a lot of different genres blended into it, and then my favorite, of course, which is horror and thriller and all that jazz.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me a little, I mean, not a lot, but a little bit of like the Sixth Sense, but Stir of Echoes.
Love Stir of Echoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of had that feeling like what Tony was just saying, you know, the mystery, the murder, the thrill, you know, type of thing, all kind of combined. excuse me.
Whatever, coffee. and the one thing, too, is it's got some pretty cool kills in it, too. Oops, someone's getting a phone call.
Sorry, guys.
That's okay. It's all right. Not to throw Wolfie under the bus, but he gets phone calls during the show sometimes, but he answers, which I think is great. It's a landline next to his computer, and he'll be like, hello? And actually, the last time I made fun of him, I made a Doc Brown reference. I was like, 1985 is calling. And then he
picked up the phone. Just like, as I pick up the phone, he goes,
Monty, meet me at the clock tower. And then that was it. But anyways, there was some really cool kills. I mean, there was some digital effects that were in there. Yeah. There was some practical as well. I know there's some people that are totally 100% anti-digital effects. I know it's probably cheaper in the roundabout way to do the digital effects, but I thought that they were pulled off fairly well. You know, some of them you can tell are digital effects, but if they're done well and it's appropriate for the scene, I don't have an issue with them.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever gonna.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I much prefer practical effects, and whenever it's possible to pull them off, I try to use practical effects and only use them if it's absolutely necessary, or blend the two to make it look more real. But I'm not a big fan of digital either, unless it's a Transformers movie.
And then that being said, it's not all Transformers movies, right? You're not a big fan of all Transformers movies.
I'm a big fan of the Transformers ride at Universal Studios.
Okay, all right, there we go. All right, that's good. I'll give you that one.
I like that one.
I don't think I've ever, like, when I went to Universal in Florida, they didn't have a Transformers ride, so I'll have to go back.
Oh, it's incredible, man. It's like Star Tours on crack.
Really?
Yeah, it's like
best. Okay, haven't been to Star Tours on crack either. So.
That's an interesting one. I don't know if we want to go around the room and maybe we can all just talk a bit about like maybe a favorite scene without giving too much away.
That's gonna be difficult.
It's gonna be difficult, but it's a challenge I think you're ready to take.
Well, tell you what.
So we'll start with you then.
Actually, right. Before we do that, for the new people joining us, why don't we show the trailer again, and. Griff, would you like to give a brief synopsis of Cold Moon?
Sure. The Cold Moon, so it takes place in the 80s when there was a lot of wealth and corruption within the wealth. And it is following a mysterious murder in the town. And we're not sure who committed it. But after the murder takes place, the victim of the murder appears, maybe trying to seek vengeance. And maybe the supernatural entities that are looking for vengeance are real, and maybe they're only in the heads of the folks who created the murder.
Okay, here we go. Trailer for Cold Moon.
Hey, Mr. Geiger.
Hi, sweetheart.
Margaret left on her wheel right after lunch.
I just thought she'd be back by now.
She can't have gotten very far on a bike. We will find her.
Now, you know that you've been behind on your payments for 8 months, right?
Today's not a real good day to talk about that.
Evan Larkin is going to lose the farm right soon, and I want to make sure that land comes to the bank.
Where is Margaret?
We can't find Margaret.
Jenny! Come here!
Shall not all sleep,
but we shall all be changed in a moment. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall all be changed.
So tired, Daddy.
You don't look tired.
You know what kind of tired I'm talking about.
Those.
Yeah, my trainer has me drinking two of these a day, which is a lot of fucking water, and I have to piss every 15 minutes. It's really annoying, but...
I feel all the time.
God, it's awful. I'm like peeing in bottles as I drive home. I just can't hold it.
Just tapes a hose down to down his leg, you know, just...
Well, on that note, we are back.
And... Oh, of course.
Let's start with Yo-Yo. What did you think of Cold Moon?
Oh, are we doing what we think, or what do we? What was our favorite
a little,
scene?
A little of both. Yeah, again, don't get too descriptive because you don't want to ruin it for people that may want to check it out this Friday on the 6th on video on demand. See what I did there? All right, Yo-Yo.
I saw what you did there.
All right, cool.
I really did dig the film. I have to say, I have to agree with Tony. I like how it was a mixture of different genres. At one point, I did think it was going to go a certain way, and it didn't, which I was very happy about. One part that I was a little bit sad about, which understandable due to the times, the black guy. Like, why are you pinning on the black guy? But...
I actually changed that. Like, in the script, it was a white dude that they were pinning it on, but I really like the fact that in this town, it's like they're blaming him. It made a lot of sense to me.
It does make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it's just so too realistic. It's too realistic. It's supposed
it seemed
to be
relevant for like what's going on now, and it seemed like it absolutely would have happened back then in the small southern town. So I changed that because there wasn't really a white dude who looked like Norman Bates who like auditioned for the part. It was really good, but I'm like, I like what it did to the story, and it added just a little bit of a deeper level. So I was intentional. So.
Your favorite part was when they realized we got to set this guy free. That's the favorite part. Like, he didn't do it.
I mean, the other visual part I liked was the bike scene. I mean, that's not giving away anything because it was in the trailer, so everybody just did see part of that. That at one point she is literally riding an invisible bike down the street, which was a very awesome scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that scene too. What's funny about that scene is that in the book, Margaret and her bicycle is a character in itself. She's always on her bicycle. But after we had actually shot that scene, somebody was passing around like memes of celebrities on invisible bikes. And it was hilarious. It's like it was just still images. And they'd like take Leonardo DiCaprio and paint his bike out. And it looked really funny. But I've seen those memes. I'm like, that would also be really fucking creepy if in one of the scenes the bike was invisible. So we had him go back and paint it out based on like a funny meme. But knowing that would play really creepy as the end result.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't see that meme until after the movie was over. I'm like, you know what? Let's do that.
Yeah.
Tony.
So it makes a brilliant director.
Well, I gave my thoughts. I mean, I really dug it. And like I said, it just flows very well because it has the mix of different genres. So I'm not going to say you get bored of it, but having the different aspects of it kind of just brings the movie along that much easier. I must say one of my favorites, the reveals, I guess you want to call it, of some of the deaths in the movie, I really dug. But the one scene where you find one of the victims with the bike, I thought that was really cool. Like, I was like, oh, are they going to show it? And, you know, I definitely dug that part.
Wolfie?
Yeah, I'm gonna jump along the same vibe as Tony and Yo-Yo. Is like, I really love this movie. It was a fun movie, and it was a movie set in the 80s. And a lot of times I watch movies that are set in the 80s, and I don't feel that they really come close to getting the 80s right. You know, because I was a teenager of the 80s, like Final Girls. You know, there's a scene in there where they're playing a song that's not even released. It's supposed to be 1983, and the song's not released until 91. You know, just stuff like that just drives me nuts. And I feel that you got the feel, the look, and everything right for the 80s. And I'm with Yo-Yo, man. I love the bicycle scene. That was like the big thing that just kind of like, I was like, wow, that's really, really good. Because I'm the person that I like watching like older movies like The Invisible Man. And I see that they draped him in a black cloth, you know, and they shot it against the back background to make his face disappear and all that. I'm like, I like to figure that stuff out. I mean, nowadays, it's a lot of it's computer generated. But I'm thinking, could they do that practically if they really wanted to today? You know, is there a way? And that, so I'm, my mind's spinning like that, you know, when I'm watching it.
I actually kind of thought that too. I'm like, how did they do that? So it's interesting to know that they painted it out. I mean, that makes more sense than what I was thinking. So I'm really like, oh, they just have a crane and she's hanging on from a crane. And like, I didn't know.
Okay, so I wasn't the only one who thought
no,
that.
No, no, no. See, that's why you make movies and we watch them because we don't understand how things work.
It would be a lot more expensive if I was making it.
Totally.
It was a brutal job to paint her out too. It's like I was no joke, like frame by frame, but I really liked the end result of it. But I practically, like, if I were to thought of it beforehand and try to do it practically, I don't know that I would have tried to do it practically because that would have been a nightmare. And it wouldn't have looked good either. Like that's an instance where visual effects is gonna make it better. Like you can't do that practically better.
Yeah.
Because you'll see the pick points on her, she'll be riding all awkwardly. It's like you have to train like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and shit.
But when you watch like when you watch The Invisible Man from the 40s, you see the outline of the sackcloth that's around him. I mean, it's not 100% disappeared, but you kind of get the idea of how they did it. And
yeah, but they were also the you know, you did, how many movies did you see at that time that were doing that? So you're making a movie now that's takes place in the 80s. It's still would people really forgive that? Unless the whole movie was done like that, you know?
No, I get that. I'm just saying. I mean, I think there's some things you could get away with. I'm just, you know, but that's me.
We did do a lot of stuff, right? There's probably some stuff in there you would think is CGI that's not by using old school tricks like that, like mirrors and stuff. And like sometimes you'll see Margaret the Ghost, and for sure you'd think it was CG because it's just easy to do it that way. But it's easier to take the mirror and send the reflection to a different place and do stuff like that. So we did do a lot of that as well.
That's cool. Yeah.
Bicycle tricks.
I like
that. I'm gonna agree with the guys and say that the bicycle scene like really stuck out. I mean, I do enjoy a lot of the kills, and which is a weird thing to say, but I mean, there's particular ones that I don't want to give away. There's one in particular that I just like. Oh, that was really brutal right there, and you know, but it's and even. Again, I don't want to give too much away with the bridge and someone maybe being thrown off of the bridge. It was so aggressive. Like the throw was just like, wow, he freaking meant that. Like,
that stunt girl definitely got the wind knocked out of her.
For real, because I was like, wow, that was aggressive.
Yeah. That was some really good stunt work there.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. And just like I told you guys earlier, like, and I know. You know, Yo-Yo felt the same way. I thought it was going to go a certain way because I never read the book. I don't know. I didn't even know there was a book because I'm a guy who watches movies and doesn't read books.
It's a book available for download on Audible, too, if you'd rather listen to it.
Okay. good to know. But, yeah.
He does do that. He spent 12 hours listening to Ready Player One.
I did. But, I really liked how it changed. And I dug it. Again, it's Uncorked hasn't let me down. You guys haven't let me down either. It's a good one.
It's really nice when we don't see. I mean, we talked about this last week too, and it's like Kevin and I and Tony, we're all big horror fans, and a lot of times you can see where the movie's gonna go, you know, and it's nice not to be able to do that, you know, with the way this movie started out, because we could have just said, oh, I know where it's going, and you know, you take a left turn and, hey, we're not right. And that feels good when I'm not right. Because a lot of times I'm like, okay, I got this movie figured out. I'm not disappointed, but I'm like, I got to figure it out. But
yeah,
I did.
That sucks when you haven't figured it out, too. I agree. It's like, that's no fun. That's why I like the script. Because I've made movies that are straight homages that you know where they're going. I made one called Mask Maker that I like a lot. But I mean, the whole thing is just an homage to 80s horror. You know, yeah, thank you. I love that movie too, but it's like it's not a surprise like this. That's what I liked about the screenplay. It's like, okay, nobody's gonna see this coming, not 100% anyways.
Yeah.
Leo, what did you think of it?
Well, as I mentioned before, I really enjoyed it as well. And I'm on the same page as you. The bike scene is just, that's just some crazy shit.
Because thinking about like what she is and that's happening. Yeah. That's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, wait a minute. Didn't I just do this to that person? And now they're riding an invisible bike? Yeah. Wait a minute. That ain't right.
I'm so happy you spent that time.
But not to jump on the same bandwagon, you know, just to give, you know, a couple other items. Like I mentioned before, the Jeep scene in the graveyard when he's, you know, driving backwards and all of a sudden, you know, you see her in, you know, he drives past her. But also the very last scene when something is in the hand.
Yeah,
I thought that was really cool. And speaking of green scene, green screen, you know, totally off topic, but I don't know if you saw that Seth Rogen footage they found. Somebody bought a red camera, and then there was This Is the End footage of him screaming. So you're going to see a bunch of memes with Seth Rogen in them in the coming week or so. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty funny. I thought of that when you mentioned memes.
When you mentioned the whole people riding invisible bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Oh, another thing I like too is I think there was a few times where like a car hit a particular ghost and it was like water.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I thought that was cool. I thought that was cool. I like that.
Yeah. There's so many scenes that I could say, but I don't want to.
Yeah, we would give everything away.
Yeah.
Like I want to bring up some kills, but I don't. Because it's like, right. I want someone to have something to look.
You know what we can
on the 6th.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we can bring up. This comes out this Friday, so make sure you check it out. Cold Moon, and it's available on VOD. And where else is it going to be available?
So it's coming out in theaters this Friday, and then it's also available on all VOD platforms everywhere. It doesn't come out on DVD and Blu-ray until January 2nd, 2018. Is when it's coming out, and that'll have a lot of the extended scenes, because there is almost 40 minutes of scenes that aren't in the movie. It'll have the commentary on there, only on the Blu-ray and DVD. That's not until January 2nd. And then it may be, I don't know what the deal is yet, but it might be on cable, like premium cable, in May of 2018. But VOD is definitely the quickest way to see it, and in time for Halloween. I just watched four movies on Halloween, so I definitely watched this one.
Nice. So I have we've gone around the horn, us guys, talking about what we think of it. Rachel, have you seen it? Have you seen the finished product?
I did get to see it, actually. We went, I saw it in, the first time I got to see the final finished film was in Madrid, actually. We went to, I guess, what was like the official like world premiere when anybody first got to see it on a big screen was in Madrid, Spain, at Nocturna Film Festival. And I don't know. I mean, as an actor, you never know what the final product is going to be like. You know, you just go in and you do your part and your best, hopefully, and you hope for the best. But like I said, I mean, I knew ahead of time. Like I just, like I said before, Griff is amazing and was just excited. And I knew everybody in the cast. All the actors were so good, and the story was so good. It was hard, you know, just like anything else. It's hard to wait that long to get to actually see the final product. And you're like waiting kind of in suspense, being like, oh, I just hope it's as good as, you know, you hope it could be. And I was so like pleasantly surprised, you know, at how good it really turned out. I'm so excited for people to get to see it. I think it's like, it's such a great thrill ride, and it brings so many different things to the table, you know, so many different, are different ways to look at it, perspectives, and especially coming from a place where it really does, you can kind of take your own guesses or your own perspective on how, what's actually going on. And those are always my favorite type of films.
And the other question is, do you have I know that there's some actors that don't like watching themselves on the screen because they get critical of how they could have did the scene better, or they don't feel that scene was, do you have a hard time watching yourself?
Well, like I said, I have a hard time watching scary movies, so I love acting in them. I've done several, but it's hard for me to watch. Obviously, after I've done it, it's a lot easier. You know what I mean? It's very different after you've shot the film. It's not like I necessarily get scared watching it, but I think for me, it's more I'm able to kind of step outside of myself when I watch it. Like, I don't really see it as myself on screen. What? It's more able to, you know, just like in life, I was kind of asking, like, how can I get better next time? And I feel like being able to watch your performances from a, like, an observer perspective, how can I improve my next role is really powerful for me at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to watch old things I've done. Like when I watch my film, like, you know, a couple of films, that's hard for me to watch because I'm like, oh man, I've grown so much back then. But you know, you have to like come at it with, like, understanding, you know, like, of course, I hope you get better every time you do a new project or, you know, a new type of character or in your other stuff. Challenging yourself. I mean, how are we ever supposed to grow if we don't challenge ourselves?
Very true. Hey, Leo, you want to show the trailer?
Yeah. Here we go. Here's the trailer for Cold Moon.
Hey, Mr. Geiger.
Hi, sweetheart.
Margaret left on her wheel right after lunch.
I just thought she'd be back by now.
She can't have gotten very far on a bike. We will find her.
Now, you know that you've been behind on your payments for 8 months, right?
Today's not a real good day to talk about that.
Evan Larkin is going to lose the farm right soon, and I want to make sure that land comes to the bank.
Where is Margaret?
We can't find Margaret.
Jenny! Come here! Now!
Oh, Margaret!
We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall all be changed.
You're so tired, Danny.
You don't look tired.
You know what kind of tired I'm talking about.
And we are back. So, Rachel, during the break, you were talking about you have something coming out soon.
I
besides
do. Well,
Cold Moon.
Soon is for everybody to, I cannot wait to hear what people, you know, think about that, especially just the experience in the film. That was one of my favorite things, getting to when we were at Nocturna Film Festival in Spain, like getting to actually be there in the theater with people and how people reacted. Was one of my favorite things. I mean, especially over there, it was amazing. I mean, Griff and I both talked about this. People were like getting up and screaming and clapping and yelling and so interactive with the film, which I feel like you don't get in theaters here. And it was just such a cool experience to get to experience it that way, especially the first time seeing it. So yeah, Cold Moon for sure. Like we were waiting a long time for this to come out, so we're really excited. But I also do play a role on the new show Wisdom of the Crowd, which is CBS's new show. And it's such a cool story. And I play a really, you know, pretty fast character on it. So, yeah.
Yeah. That just debuted Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. My character comes in a couple episodes in, but, yeah, it'll be cool.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Good to watch it. Thank you.
Yeah, congrats.
Looks like it's, yeah. Have you guys seen the trailers for it yet?
Yeah, I haven't.
No.
Yeah, it looks really good. So definitely
Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, it's Jeremy Piven. New thing. And then as Griff touched on earlier, we might be doing a new one together soon too. So that'll be really exciting.
Yes, we will. We'll be shooting probably end of the year. But that's for another time.
Another time.
And
and Griff, you were saying that you're Cold Moon all the time right now.
The time right now. I mean, I got lots of stuff coming out, but we're doing the big red carpet premiere in Los Angeles on Thursday. This is coming out this week, and this has been my baby for so long that I can't even, there's so much going on, but I can't even tell you what it is right now because I'm just so focused on Cold Moon.
That's awesome.
This week. Next week, I'll be back onto the other stuff. But
yeah. So it's getting a theatrical release. Is it just limited theaters, or do you know how many theaters it's going to be in?
Yeah, it's going to be in the 10 biggest cities. And it's actually, I think it's about 12 cities now. It's New York, Los Angeles, Houston, Boston, There's a little flyer actually somewhere that has all the theaters and all the venues listed, and it's playing the whole week. So yeah, you can go on any of these venues and get tickets: Denver, San Francisco, Chicago, Philly, Cleveland, Atlanta. And they had some really, really cool theaters too. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And especially during this, like, you know, the Halloween time. It's like,
oh yeah, yeah. There's nothing better than seeing a good horror movie in a theater.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Surrounded by people that are freaked out.
Yep.
you said like at the in Madrid that people were standing up and like clapping and stuff. I think the reason why they don't do it in the U.S. because everyone just tells them to sit the hell down because you spend $75 for a movie ticket.
Someone would probably, you know, beat them down. Or, you know.
Yeah. I know I would be irritated, but that's cool that you get that kind of reaction. I mean, if I made a movie, I'd want that reaction too.
Yeah, it was a very enthusiastic crowd. It was super cool.
That's great.
I actually was at a theater not too long ago for the first time. And like, you see this footage of these movies all the time and they'll show like people clapping or something like that. And you're like, that never happens. And I can't remember what the movie was, but not too long ago, I was at a movie, and at the end when the movie was over, like a bunch of people clapped. And I was like, wow, that's been a while since that's happened.
Yeah.
That's special. I was actually trying to record when we were in Madrid. I brought my night vision camera and I was trying to record the crowd reaction from behind the screen, but then I chickened out because it had a red light on it, and I didn't want everybody to see me back there or wonder why there's a red light moving around behind the curtain. So I ended up turning it off. But
can you just put gaffer's tape over the red light?
I tried that, but when I did that, that was actually whatever that was the source that was making the night vision possible.
Ah.
When I put the gaffer's tape over the light, it was also receiving the light as well.
Okay.
So it was the IR illuminator. That's what it was. Yeah.
The IR illuminator.
Son of a bitch.
So anyways. Were there any scenes that you guys like taping more than others? Were there something you're like, this scene's definitely going to, you know, reach the crowd the most? Or,
I mean, it's always so hard to tell what's going to come out well when you're shooting it, I think, anyways. I mean, you know when something feels good or you block a scene and the actors are doing a good job. But for me, it's very, very hard to tell, you know, what's going to be an epic scene until it's, you know, until it's cut together for me. But one of my favorite things for sure was when Chris Lloyd was leaving, he was getting in his car with his driver, and I walked over to him and I said, you know, thank you very much again. And he said, just like Doc Brown, he said, we'll meet again someplace, sometime. And then he took off. I was like, oh my God, I think that was the last line from Back to the Future. It's not, but it sounded like it. Really excited about that.
Wow, he's going to be at Rhode Island Comic Con coming up. So I don't know if we should wait in line to meet him.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He's coming to our premiere on Thursday too.
That's awesome.
Which Comic Con is he coming to?
Rhode Island Comic Con.
Oh, the Rhode Island Comic Con? Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, some say it's actually getting close to the size of New York or maybe even a little bigger.
It's big. They just added, add? Yeah, Mark Ruffalo.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty big. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And expensive. But, anyways, enough about that. But yeah, I mean, again, I can't say enough. Great movie. It was a really good time. Really great cast. Congrats. It's a fun one for sure.
Definitely. And you said January it'll come out for Blu-ray and
January 2nd.
So it'll be on those shelves at some point.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah. So Griff,
it's so much better, obviously, on the big screen.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I already checked out where it's going to be playing in Boston. So.
Where is it playing?
Apple Cinema in Cambridge.
Where is that? I don't even know where that is.
Cambridge.
Oh, duh. I'm just saying. I don't even know where in Cambridge. I didn't know if it was going to be like. I didn't know if it was going to be at that other one, Coolidge Corner. I don't know if it was going to be there, but it's not.
There was also. We were talking to the programmer over at Brattle Theater in Cambridge, as well. I don't know if you know where that theater is.
I've heard of it.
They may be playing there as well.
Cool.
Nice. So, Griff, where do you like people following you?
Twitter is the best place to follow me. That's where I'm most active. It's at GE First. Oh, there it is. I'm watching the Facebook Live. There it is.
That's right. Yeah, just hold up the camera right there. Yeah. Hold up the fidget spinner. Sorry.
And Rachel, where do you like people following you?
I would say probably, I mean, Instagram or Facebook is where I'm most active, but on Instagram, it's R. Brooksmith. But you can even just go to my, on my website, I have, it goes to everything. So it's just Rachel with RACHELEBSmith.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tony.
You can find me on Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, where I do movie reviews, which I did the 31 days, half October is my like 31 days of Halloween kind of deal, where I did a review for Cold Moon today. So check that out. I am also on Twitter and Horror Amino at the same. And I have a Instagram, Tony's Movies, where I show off the movies behind me. And you can find me on The Dorkening.
Do you really have nine fingers?
Oh, it's a messed up finger. So in high school, I'm part Italian. So they thought, you know, Tony has nine fingers kind of sounds Italian, like mobbish. So
you sound Italian as well when you speak.
Well, kind of.
It's the Jersey. It's the Jersey.
With the territory.
Yeah.
Yo.
You can find me at boymeetsphone.com. Also, boymeetsphone on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you're doing your social media. I should probably be there. Also, make sure you're following New England Comic Con Reviews at necomicconreviews.com or NECC Reviews on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. And, of course, you can find me here on The Dorkening.
Wolfie.
You can find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolfman, Twitter at The 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl, every Sunday on The Dorkening, every Tuesday on Weekend Horror Show, doing Horror One with Kev. Of course, when we're done with that, we're going to do the Rick and Horror reviews. I'm also doing the 31 days of Halloween, and I'm not as structured as Tony is. I'm not organized. He does alphabetical independent films. I just pull the stuff out of my collection and watch them. So I got day three up today, and that was Psycho. So go check that out if you get a chance.
Kevin?
A Knuckle on Twitter, Instagram, A Knuckle 3 on Snapchat. Every Sunday in The Dorkening, Tuesday on Wicked Horror Show. Doing all the reviews with Wolfie, and we will be at ScareCon New York this weekend.
Yeah, Verona, New York. That's going to be a blast. I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And The Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.